Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Colleges around the country and here in Illinois have had to rapidly adjust the way they teach and many aspects of campus life because of the pandemic. Last spring, students left campus early to stop the spread of the coronavirus, and the semester was cut short. Students and teachers began learning virtually, dorm rooms were closed, and graduation ceremonies were put on hold. While each plan is slightly different, now universities like Illinois State, Northern Illinois University, and the University of Illinois are releasing plans to bring students back into the classroom in the fall. Some professors have expressed concerns, however, about teaching in person again, and what happens if there's a second wave of the virus. Others feel confident in their university's plans to reopen. Listeners, we want to know how you're feeling about universities reopening for in-person classes. The phone lines are open at 800-222-9455. Maybe you're working or studying at a university in Illinois, or maybe you're the parent of a student, or maybe you just live in a college town. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. Make yourself heard, 800-222-9455. To get their perspective on this, we're joined by three university professors. Later, we'll hear from a couple of students. I'd like to welcome Stacy Otto. She's a professor of Social Foundations of Education and Qualitative Inquiry at Illinois State University. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by two professors at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Mark Peacher is Associate Dean of Faculty at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business, and Nick Berbulis is Professor of Education Policy, Organization, and Leadership at the University of Illinois. Both of you, welcome as well to the 21st.
Thanks, Brian. It's happy to be on the show today.
Great.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Stacy, I'd like to start with you. In the plan that ISU put out, it's called the Redbirds Return Plan. It says about a third of courses have moved online so that classrooms can be less dense. Have you decided whether or not you'll be teaching virtually?
Well, I was initially on the schedule to teach courses in a hybrid format, which meant that some of it had to be face-to-face by the way the university defines that. I have since petitioned, and I've actually had to go through the ADA accommodation process in order to teach all online in the fall. And right now, it looks like we have about 46% of our courses in the fall online, about 26% face-to-face, and the remaining will be in a hybrid format or some combination thereof.
Interesting. So when you mentioned the ADA accommodation process, this wasn't just as simple as talking to your dean or department chair or however that would work and sort of going through a verbal. You had to kind of go through paperwork or something along those lines?
Yes. And you have to disclose, you know, medical information and personal details. And you do that through the ADA compliance office. My chair has been incredibly supportive, but initially, you know, we just actually had a change in provost July 1st, but our previous provost was insisting that we have a third online, a third hybrid, and a third face-to-face. So we were polled, but then how we were polled wasn't necessarily honored. And for some people, it's still not being honored.
So Stacy, Illinois State has said that its plan is adjustable, right? And that it'll continue to adjust as it receives feedback. Well, I wonder if you can talk about what some of your concerns are with the plan as it stands right now.
Well, definitely. And, you know, I'm here, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm also a representative of a larger concerned faculty group who put together a letter to the president that has over 500 signatures, which we have actually not had a response from the president on, and he has had it for about a month. Our major focus is, of course, on health and safety, but in particular, testing and tracing, which there is no plan for and no requirement for. I don't know if you know, a Harvard and Yale study came out this week that said outbreak control is going to require testing all students every 2 to 3 days. And that's a substantial commitment, you know, both from a people power perspective and financially. And of course, students then have to do that. We're extremely concerned about equity. We have a moral and legal obligation to the community that supports us and to the parents who send us their children. We know that this disease disproportionately affects people of color and the poor. And we know that those who work on campus, who clean and sanitize and prepare food, as well as the graduate students who are potentially required to teach face-to-face in order to retain their support for graduate school, their assistantships. And then we're concerned about the answers that we're getting on dorm life. We're hearing from parents that are saying they're asking about practicalities like communal bathrooms. Will there be a schedule for showering? How will my child social distance from his or her roommate? And they're getting very canned answers to the effect of, you know, the institution cannot control for all risk. And we do not think that that's acceptable.
Interesting. So, you know, I want to get to our other guests in a moment, but we have a call from Brandon in Bloomington Normal. And Stacy had just mentioned, I think she used the phrase, a moral obligation to the community that supports Illinois State University. Brandon, you're a resident of Bloomington Normal. Welcome to the 21st. What are your concerns?
Thank you very much for having me. And my concern is, you know, what we've seen in Bloomington is the latest cases have all been from mostly younger people who, as most young people do, feel invincible. And I'm just concerned that if we have this return of students and this influx of young people before there's a vaccine that is ready to help prevent the disease, it's just going to result in a very large spike that, you know, is going to put the greater community at risk.
All right. Yeah. And that's, I think that's true, not just in Bloomington Normal where you are, but certainly around Illinois. And I think across the country, it's been that sort of 20 to 29 and the teenage deciles, I guess, that those 10-year age groups where we've seen some of the biggest growth in COVID-19 cases recently. All right, Brandon. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in to the show. If anyone else wants to join the conversation, again, the number is 800-222-9455. The number is 800-222-9455. Nick Berbulis, you're a professor in the Department of Education at the U of I. Will you be teaching courses in person this fall?
I'm not a typical case, I think, because my schedule for next year, which was set a year ago, was already fully online. I do a lot of online teaching. About half my teaching is online anyway. And so it happens that next year I'll be teaching my courses online, but I would have been doing that anyway. That has nothing to do with the virus.
Well, can I ask maybe hypothetically, how would you, if you did not have online classes, maybe if you were, you know, scheduled to go back into a classroom this fall, how would you be feeling about that?
That's a fair question. So I'm over 65 years old, and I would be opting not to teach face-to-face if I had that option. The more I hear about schools like Stacy's and, you know, like many people, I read the Chronicle of Higher Ed and Inside Higher Ed every morning. The more I hear about other universities, the more grateful I am to be at U of I, because I'll just say specifically, I think there's three ways in which we're doing things better on our campus than a lot of other schools that I'm hearing about. One is there's a lot more consultation between the administration and faculty. There's a set of committees that are setting up policies for reopening. All of those committees have faculty membership. I'm on the Senate, and there have been regular, almost weekly meetings and conversations with faculty, including listening and hearing directly to the kinds of concerns that Stacy and many of her colleagues have been raising and not getting an answer to at her school. So I think there's much greater consultation and involvement with the faculty here. I think that there's a much better system in place here for testing and tracing. There's a saliva-based test that was developed here at the university that they're very proud of that is going to allow fast and cheap and frequent testing of all members of the campus community. In fact, the tents are already set up. and their tests are available now for free to everybody. All students are going to be tested when they arrive, and there will be regular retesting for students and other members of the community as things go forward.
And, I'll mention to our listeners, stay tuned, because we're going to be having a much more in-depth conversation on that testing later this very hour with an epidemiologist and a reporter who's been covering that. So,
a real expert, not like me.
All right. So,
and the third thing I'll just mention quickly that the process that Stacy described of having to jump through hoops in order to opt out of teaching is not the policy here on this campus. And the basic policy is any faculty member who for any reason says, I don't feel comfortable teaching in my classes, I want to have a hybrid or online accommodation, is being accommodated in our campus. And people don't have to go through special testing or ADA qualifications in order to justify not wanting to teach. So that's another way in which I think our campus has better policies than a lot of other universities across the country. Not flawless, but the more I hear about other places, the more grateful I am to be here.
Okay. And before we bring Mark Peacher into the conversation, we have another caller from Champaign, Urbana, Reverend Kaplow. Welcome to the 21st. How are you today?
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm calling in. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the minister for the Unitarian Universalist Church in Urbana-Champaign, and a very high proportion of our members and people who are involved with our church are, in fact, people who are also associated with the university. And so I've been watching this pretty closely. Obviously, as a resident of Urbana-Champaign, I'm really aware that what happens in the university won't stay within the bounds of the campus. And that's of tremendous concern to me. I just wanted to point out one of the differences that I see in terms of how our denomination is approaching this, which is to really consider the sort of ethical treatment of especially staff in making decisions, and also full accessibility. So, for instance, I have people in my congregation who are considered essential staff. They were even called in earlier, who say, yes, essential is expendable. And so I'm just curious how the university is planning to, A, keep that on campus, given that the residents who are not campus can't access the quick testing, and how ethics and values really play in here for the most vulnerable in our community and on campus.
Sure. Well, thank you for calling in. Please call back again, as I'm sure we're going to be continuing to discuss this this issue. Mark Peacher, you're the Associate Dean of Faculty in the Geese College of Business. I'm not going to ask you necessarily to address the Reverend's concerns, you know, speaking for the entire campus. I don't know if you want to respond to what she had to say about containing things on campus as, you know, Lincoln Avenue, University Avenue. Those are not, you know, hard borders. Things might spread into the community. I wonder if you share those concerns.
Oh, well, sure. And I do know that. So first of all, the viewpoint I have is, as the title of my position suggests, Associate Dean of Faculty in the College of Business. But even within that somewhat narrow scope, I take comfort, sort of what like Nicholas was talking about earlier, knowing that the experts on campus who have designed our shield testing and our capacity to do contact tracing, they're working very closely with the Champaign County Public Health Department. And so I think the key thing in providing an effective safety net for all of our community and our county will be that continued interaction between the university, you know, and the county health officials. But as I would just say, you can certainly ask me any particular question. I was just shaking my head yes, as Nicholas was discussing how fortunate I feel to be associated with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. When I was talking to not only other colleagues in state, you know, of Illinois schools, but other Big Ten universities, when they heard that we could have upwards of the capacity to do 50,000 daily tests and get a response within 48 hours, sometimes within 7 hours, it was a huge relief. And so I can't imagine facing the same type of idea of all students coming back to campus and you know, coming into a somewhat small metropolitan area like Champaign or Urbana if we didn't have that combination of saliva testing, which was largely, you know, developed here, as my understanding. Mm-hmm. And then I guess you're going to talk more about this later, but as a faculty member, that gave me a lot of comfort. The other thing I would say,
And you know what, I'm gonna ask you to pause right there. We need to take a quick break.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, wait. This is public radio. We don't have commercials on public radio. Maybe some underwriting if we're fortunate. But we were gonna continue this conversation, an important issue about students coming back to campus this fall, and then later in this hour, we're gonna be having a more detailed conversation about the testing regimen planned for U of I. This is the 21st. Stay with us. More to come in a moment. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking all this hour about higher education in Illinois, colleges planning to reopen with a significant amount of on-campus instruction this fall. We've already heard plans from Illinois State, Northern Illinois University, University of Illinois. We're speaking with a number of voices on this issue. Stacy Otto is a professor of Social Foundations of Education and Qualitative Inquiry at Illinois State University. She is planning to do pretty much a virtual or an online course load this fall. Mark Peacher is Associate Dean of Faculty at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business. We're also speaking with Nick Berbulis, who is a professor of Education Policy, Organization, and Leadership at the University of Illinois. He also has an online course load that was planned before the pandemic, he said, but he would be concerned about going back into the classroom despite the University of Illinois' extensive plans and testing regimen. Mark, before the break, I had to interrupt you, so I'm going to let you finish your point before we move on in the conversation, please.
No, thanks so much, Brian. So the other point I was just going to make somewhat extemporaneously, following off on Stacy's earlier points, you know, we, and Nick pointed this out too, but we let our faculty, we surveyed our faculty basically and asked them earlier in the summer, hey, do you feel comfortable doing face-to-face instruction, or do you want to do some sort of hybrid online program? Well, and then time passed, and we saw what was happening across the country. And so we asked our faculty again relatively quite recently, and some of them changed their preferences. So as the date draws nearer, you see people changing their teaching preferences. And I don't know how many switched from online to face-to-face. I think most of the flow is the other way. But we still will learn more about SHIELD in the coming days, I think. So, I think that, and we'll just continue to monitor the situation. That's basically where we'll have to go. But the faculty autonomy was important to us, and the infrastructure that I mentioned earlier. Without that infrastructure, I don't know if it would have been much more difficult, let's put it that way, to contemplate bringing everyone back to campus.
Sure. And I want to remind our listeners, you can join our conversation if you're a student, a parent maybe, or just somebody who lives in town where these universities are located. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. Are you concerned about a lot of young people coming back into your community? Or maybe you're hopeful because that's a lot of potential economic activity in town resuming. 800-222-9455. The number again, 800-222-9455. We got a voice memo from a first-year University of Illinois graduate student. Lauren Bryant will be using Beckwith Residential Support Services at Nugent Hall. This is a program where people with disabilities can get the support they need to attend college, both in terms of the physical infrastructure in the building and in the rooms, and personal assistance to provide medical and living support. Here's what Lauren had to say.
I would say that I am very excited to come back to campus. It's been a little bit difficult because the program where I live announced that they were closing a little under a month ago. So we've been fighting a lot to, first of all, allow us to use the rooms that we signed housing contracts for. And now we're working to restore funding to be able to pay those personal assistants and allow us to live there safely. But overall, I'm really looking forward to coming back to campus. A little nervous, of course, but I think that campus has a really good plan and hopefully people listen and wear their masks and socially distance.
All right. Thank you, Lauren, for sharing your voice memo with us. That's somebody who is excited, although a little nervous about coming back onto campus. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation now. Dennis Austin is also a student at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We had Dennis on the 21st back in the spring when we did a segment about students considering a pandemic gap year. Dennis, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me on, Brian. Yes, we did speak a few months ago about having a gap year. And one of the options for me at that time was to consider sitting the semester out. I have made the decision recently to return to the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. But I think we are all tiptoeing around an obvious event that will happen. I fear that in the next coming months, we will all receive an email at the university telling us that a student was infected with coronavirus and that we should all be safe and all shelter in place and effectively ruminating every progress that we've made, essentially reverting back to a shutdown or something that's remnant of what we had in spring. I am not that confident based on a variety of factors, not limited to, but including the fact that this is a 20 to 30,000 student population. That's notwithstanding the professors and faculty. That's not even withstanding the community members who reside there. So in the event upon a return of students to campus, there will be a new surge of cases to the degree as the severity of the surge of the cases, that's yet to be determined. But I do fear that in the next coming months that we will see a mirroring of what transpired over the spring. And I would also like to include that it is not just my own personal concerns about the density of the population in Urbana-Champaign, but it's more so about the fact that individuals at the university, particularly younger students, are not taking this seriously. That this is a callous disregard for not just their own welfare, but for the welfare and safety of others. And with that being said, I have little to no confidence that this semester will proceed without any problems. I have a fear that what happened in the spring will unfortunately happen again.
And you know, Dennis, we had some tweets on this sort of along this same idea. Tom tweeted at us, where there's a campus, there's a bar, there's a party. They are not prepared. And we also got a tweet from Nathaniel echoing some of the calls we heard earlier. It's not just the students, faculty being affected by these decisions. It's the college towns, their citizens, their workers who would also see an increased risk of infection. Stacey, I want to bring you back into the conversation. You're at Illinois State University. How concerned are you about a second wave and potentially another disruptive shutdown? Do you think, I mean, is that in the cards potentially at ISU, or do you think the university is going to try
to avoid it? It seems inevitable. I think it's important to be clear that we are still in the middle of the first wave of this pandemic. And that's been made, you know, clear by the medical powers that be and by all the research that we're seeing. You know, we already have students back. Leases started on off-campus apartments on July 1st, and we are already seeing a significant uptick. We're already reporting that we have multiple restaurants that had to close down in the last week because of exposure. this is already happening. And, you know, we start our dorm rollout for people moving in on the 7th, which is by appointment and is rolling out over a week-long period this time. But, you know, this, the idea that students will be students is just inescapable in this. And, you know, we understand that there is this kind of unresolvable financial tension between the financial well-being of the institution and the surrounding community and its health. And that is probably unresolvable, but there are better choices than the, some of the ones that we're making.
You know, Mark, I would like to ask you to sort of respond to what Stacy just said there. I mean, you're in the business college, the Geese College of Business, I think was an early proponent for returning to campus. And correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I wonder how much of the urgency for reopening in-person instruction is based on enrollment and financial concerns for the university. I mean, to paraphrase Saturday Night Live last spring, you know, students might not want to pay flagship state school rates for a, you know, what's essentially a University of Phoenix online type education.
Well, that's a really fair question. And I know it's a question that our alumni and current parents of students, you know, are asking. Nick knows this, but maybe it's not widely known, but, you know, not all online learning experiences are created equal. And so in the Geese College of Business, for a lot of good fortunate reasons, about several years ago, let's say four or five years ago, we had an idea to move into the online space for our MBA program. And what we have there is a really world-class e-learning team. When I work with them, I mean, there's like a, you walk into there, it's like a TV kind of studio almost, except it's equipped to do, you know, a lot of communication online via Zoom and all kinds of other technologies. And so we had this infrastructure built in place, and we had been working with people who are video specialists, audio specialists, you know, legal specialists, helping also converting all slides so that people with disabilities would be not at all disadvantaged any further with their learning objectives. So our learning experience online at the Geese College is really unparalleled, in my really humble opinion. And I can say that because I'm not taking any credit. Everyone else of my colleagues, you know, did that. So I think that that capacity will help mitigate some of those concerns. As far as the idea of economics, yeah, there's no doubt that part of this is economics. And I think that's part of what's going on here. We're talking about multiple objectives where there is inevitably some trade-offs being made, and people can talk a lot about, well, I'm just going to be guided by the science. But of course, the science can be very, very helpful in informing us in our decisions. But ultimately, there's some policies that need to be made. So what campus and with a lot of faculty input and other stakeholder input decided, let's try to bring people back. The other big factor here, of course, is student educational quality and learning. We especially for undergrads, there's you know, decades of belief going behind this, that this the on-campus learning experience offers deeper learning than purely online. And that's one reason we continue to come together as a community. And it's even true in faculty relationships, where you can have co-authors who are all over the world, but there's still something about being face to face. So the issue for us is, how do we trade that off? And so we're trying to implement Shield as best as we can with contact tracing. As you know, as far as the spring, there weren't that many, as I recall, too many cases on campus, and we shut that down very early. We disbanded. So there wasn't, to my recollection, and certainly I would be concerned about a breakout, just as Dennis is, it sounds like. We didn't have that huge breakout on campus in the spring. We disbanded before that happened. And if anything starts to happen, I think, might, with the Shield indicating that we're not being able to contain this, then we would, yes, we probably would have to, at that point, shut things down again. It'll take ongoing monitoring.
And I want to remind our listeners, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about plans for reopening colleges and universities for in-person classes this fall. We want to hear from you if you have concerns about this, if you're a supporter of this, maybe you're a parent. student, faculty, or just a resident of the town where these universities are located. 800-222-9455. The number again, 800-222-9455. Mark, I wonder, you know, I mean, you have an all online course load, so I imagine you are a proponent of, you know, the ability to do online courses well, and I should say at least for this semester or this year. But is there something lost? I mean, education seems like one of those fields where there is something that, you know, in person, obviously student teaching is an in-person aspect. I think of music students on campus. I don't know how well you can do, you know, your timpani, you know, lessons online. You know,
I think there is.
What is lost?
There is something lost, but for students who, not talking for right now about the modal undergraduate student coming back, you know, to the extent you can face to face, I think is really hard to beat. But
yeah, I'm sorry, Mark, I don't mean to cut you off, but I said Mark, I meant Nick. And
just because Nick.
Yeah. Well, because he's the one with the online course load. So
okay, beg your pardon.
It's my bad. Nick, I wonder if you could respond to that.
Mark was doing just a fine job answering your question. I am a big advocate of online, and I want to echo something that Mark said, which is that I'm a firm believer that online can be done at least an equivalent level of quality. I would actually tell you, I've been doing online for more than 20 years, and some of my online courses have been some of the very best courses I have taught, period. Having said that, not, as you just mentioned, not everything can be taught online. And I think especially at a university like ours, where the lab sciences, engineering, ag, vet med, and other fields really do require a presence in a place doing certain kinds of work in a lab or in other settings, a fully online option just isn't realistic. And abandoning that, There are financial costs, but there are other costs as well, especially, I think, for graduate students, for research projects, for grant projects that have to be done in a specific venue. You can still have safety measures, but it can't be done. It can't be done entirely virtually. And I think there are costs there in terms of students completing their programs, completing their degrees, and moving on with their lives if they don't have the option of certain kinds of face-to-face, in-class, in-lab experiences. And that, I think, is definitely part of the risk-benefit weighing that's going on right now. Without minimizing the risks, there are risks in both directions. There's dangers in both directions, and they're not only financial, they're also educational.
Stacey, I want to give you the last word on this. We've only got about 30 seconds left, but I wonder if you can, you know, if you have just sort of a final thought, if you want to respond to anything we've heard particularly there about, you know, that risk reward in person, potential existential or certainly significant financial risk to the university.
Indeed. Thank you. You know, we're right now in the stage of the pandemic where we're in a worse place as a nation than we were when we turned students, you know, out of the dorms in March. So it's very concerning that we're welcoming so many people back into these small communities. I've been teaching online semester in and semester out for 14 years. And I think it's really important that universities don't put the message out there that online instruction is less than. It can be done well. It's a different form. It's differently engaging, but it can also be really powerful experience, as my colleagues have said. Okay. So I think it's important that we don't put that message out there that this is a lesser than education, because it's not.
Stacey Otto is a professor at Illinois State. We've also been talking to Mark Peacher and Nick Berbulis from the University of Illinois faculty. Thank you all so much for joining us. Dennis Austin, student at the University of Illinois Urbana, please stick around. We're going to continue the conversation specifically about COVID testing at U of I. Stay with us.